Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. I'm Kevin A. Potter's beat writer, Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. We're a day late. Things happen. Let's not talk about it. Let's move on. That's how the Padres feel after last night, Jay. How do you like how I did that?
That was pretty good, Kevin. You know, I had a function to attend last night to support a charity, which turned out to be good for two reasons. One, it always feels good to support a charity. And two, I didn't have to watch the Padre game last night. So I got in the car.
But you missed history. You missed comedy and history. I know. You probably wouldn't have hung out.
That's the thing. I mean, I got in the car and started, and so turned on the radio, and I heard 6-2, and I thought, I don't need to listen to this. And by the time I got home, it was 10-2. And then by the time I realized that Ian Kinsler was pitching, it was too late to turn on the TV. But I mean, it seems like he's now, what, their second best reliever after Kirby Yates? Are we going to see more of that, Kevin?
And remarkably, he's the best hitter at a position.
Absolutely. So. And I guess he was the first pitcher to homer this year, right?
First pitcher to homer this year and the first Padres pitcher ever, and I can hardly say it without laughing, first Padres pitcher ever to homer in the ninth inning.
That's so great. That's going to be
Isn't
one of
incredible?
Those great trivia questions, you know, like 40 years from now. Who was the first Padre pitcher to homer in the ninth, or who was the first Padre pitcher to homer in the 2019 season? And people will be guessing all these names, and it'll be Ian Kinsler. So
it'll be this, because it'll be like you're being a trivia contest, and it'll be that, you know, every question gets harder. That will be the first question in the trivia contest that night, will be who was the first Padres pitcher to throw a no-hitter, because this will be easy. Everyone will know that.
Oh, you're saying there'll be one?
Well, you said 40 years from now, so I'm hedging my bet.
Again, you said there'll be one?
So, anyway, yeah, no, that's the kind of, hey, first of all, I'm very thankful when stuff like that happens. It makes it fun, right? It makes sports fun. But that was a terrible game, and there's a couple things to talk about out of that sucker.
So what do you want to talk about out of it, other than the fact that it took like 4 hours to play nine innings? There's nothing like bringing an American League team in here to do that. Maybe it was just coincidence, but
I happen to think that the long-term issue is Joey Lucchesi / starting pitching. But you mentioned, and I just think probably the most immediate thing that comes to people's mind is the bullpen. Now, Carl Edwards, look, that's just that. He's, you know, four runs. The guy can't throw a strike. Either they're going to fix him or they're not. They got $500,000 international bonus pool money for Brad Wick. That's just what it is.
Right.
Throw that out. Trey Wingenter, who had thrown three hitless innings. They would have been three perfect innings in three different appearances, if not for a walk, since the last time that he imploded yesterday, gave up the three runs. Now, the first hit was like a dinker. But, you know, at some point, you're saying, no, Trey, you just got to get outs. And he is not reliably doing so. And I haven't really gotten under the hood. Here's why. Because, you know, until recently it was like, no, this guy's stuff is good. He's going to figure it out. Like, there's no people, I'm going to believe what everybody's telling me, that this guy's going to be good. Well, I think there has to be questions about that now, as they're trying to build a bullpen that is actually a part of a contender. And Trey Wingenter throws 97, and gosh, seems like he had control of the slider and it was an effective pitch. Is no longer like this young, promising guy.
No, I know. He's one of the real strange cases out there, because he seemed like the guy that when you saw him before, you know, that he was going to be someone you could rely on for these next few years. I mean, I'm always wary of relying on bullpen guys for too long. I mean, it seems like they, you know, guys bounce around because teams lose patience with them and they aren't consistent after a while. But, you know, Wingenter, you know, look, like you said, he throws 97. He's got the great slider. But all of a sudden, he's entered a bunch of games lately where he just hasn't been able to get people out. And I'm sure that, you know, that's just another one of these question marks going forward. I mean, I was a couple minutes late to our phone call here today because I wanted to write down all the guys who are in the bullpen right now. And, and I, of course, have Kinsler at the top of the list. But after him, and I mean, are there any of these guys who can be counted on going forward next year? Let's say next year, this team wants to contend. Who can be counted on going forward? So Baez, he's pitched pretty well, I think.
And people that you know that you talk to, not just people like Andy Green that are going to say the best. This kid really has promise. You know, obviously there's some figuring out about how to pitch and location and you know, different things, but man,
They believe he's really good. They also believe Morejon is very good, whether he's a starter or a reliever. But anyway, go on. So
okay,
Baez.
So then we have Edwards, and you talked about him. Who knows? You know, Munoz, I would say he's reliable at this point. But again, he's young. Perdomo, is he maybe he's your – could he be your 10th or 11th guy on a pitching staff?
I think he's your guy you need, the guy you thought you had in Bob Erlin.
Okay.
You know, everybody needs a Luis Perdomo because no matter how good you are, you got to fill some innings.
Right. Craig Stammen, okay. Free agent after the year. I think you and I are on the same page with Stammen. I don't think he's had a bad season. It's just when he's pitched poorly, it just seems to always come at a time where it basically cost a team the game or almost cost the team the game, or it's in a high leverage situation. I think you've written several times this year, he's pitched in those situations more than anyone. You know, he gave up the runs back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday, and I texted you, you know, that's the first time in 23 appearances that he's given up an earned run in back-to-back appearances, because I'm sure everyone was out there saying, how could you bring in Stammen? He just gave up a home run last night. And the reason is because he doesn't have two bad outings in a row. And, of course, then he did. And then you texted me right back and said in his last 20 appearances, his ERA was under one. So it's just those things where he pitches really well, and people don't notice that, because when he doesn't, you know, it's a four home run game, or it's a game tying home run, or that kind of thing.
What's different about him, and I feel like I have to say this, Jay, is, and you've said it here, you know, by explaining it, is it's not, well, he pitches well when things aren't on the line. Craig Stammen comes in with the game on the line 95% of the time.
Right.
So that's just the nature of being a reliever. Hey, pal, you're not getting it done.
Yeah.
Oh, you're getting it done? All right, we don't notice you.
and again, and I don't know, you know, he's also in his mid-30s, and, you know, I don't know what kind of money he's going to want next year. I don't know what the market is for him.
So here's what we get to on Craig, right? He wants to stay here. He's that kind of guy where you can believe him.
Uh-huh.
Now, there will be a market for him, and I think that is what determines whether he's back around. The Padres, I believe, will like to have him back in some capacity, not the same one he's filled for the last going on 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be like, well, check some other offers, Craig, and here's what we have for you, and here's, you know, what your role will be, or what we anticipate your role being. And, you know, I believe there's a real good chance that Craig Stammen's back here, but it's, you know, a real good chance that he's not.
Okay, and then the only other guy we haven't talked about, I mean, Kirby Yates is Kirby Yates, nobody's worried about that, is Matt Strom. And there's another guy where, do you throw this year out and put him in the bullpen next year and just figure, okay, he's going to be, if he's just a bullpen guy, he's got it figured out from last year? Or did we see enough worrisome signs this year to show that, you know, maybe you can't count on him all that much next year? He's one of those real wild card type guys to me, because again, he's obviously got good stuff. He pitched so well last year out of the bullpen, and pitched really well at times this year, and pitched really poorly at times.
In which case, I don't see any chance that they, you know, especially considering it's not like they're flush with, that's why we're having this conversation.
Right.
who are they going to fill this bullpen with?
Well, you know, especially with lefties, you can't count on Castillo at this point.
Yep. And so I just don't see, you know, you even talk about his starts. You know, he had as many quality starts if within one of any of the other starters with anywhere from 6 to 8 fewer starts.
Right.
Then put him in the bullpen, and there's been some stretches of just absolute dominance. There's just no chance that you give up on Matt Strom, though everything you said about the questions is valid. And I do think that there comes a point where they say, this is what you are. It's a reliever. It's the mentality. Matt Strom's not bad. He's not happy about that, but he, you know, channels that and becomes a heck of a reliever, is what the hope would be.
Right, right. I mean, I still think he has.
You didn't mention Andrés Muñoz, unless I blacked out for a little bit, which happened from time to time.
I did mention him, and I just said he's been very. He seems like the guy you can count on. He's been good.
Okay.
He's also very young.
Now you got it. I'm sorry, Jay. I'm holding my first cup of coffee right now, which is irresponsible of me.
I thought my memory was fading. Wait, who am I talking to again?
I remember now that very clearly that you said that. So well done, Jay.
So anyway, it's just there's clearly question marks, and it's that situation where going forward. Look, there's probably enough talent out there to get to be a good bullpen because we've seen it at times, mm-hmm. but there's just enough inconsistency. Well, way too much inconsistency where you just don't know, and it's the the saying, and I think the. I've given Ben Higgins credit for this before, is like the first one to say, to tweet that it would be a lot easier if the relievers would all tell Andy Green before the game whether they're going to be good or bad on that particular night, and it would make it a lot easier to decide which guy to bring in which situation. But the problem is there's too many guys out there right now where you just don't know what you're going to get. When Kirby Yates comes in, you pretty much know what you're going to get. When Munoz comes in, despite the one bad game, you pretty much know what you're going to get. It's a lot of the other guys where there's just enough inconsistency to make it a little bit shaky going forward. And I don't throw Baez in there because, I mean, he hasn't pitched all that much, and he really does look good most of the time when he's out there.
And I will say this, and it's something that there's a little tease about what I'm going to do later for the off day. That everything you just said is true. And then there's the factor that Andy Green and Darren Balsley have to, figure in every game is certain guys that we are, I mean, as the guys that follow the team all the time, marginally aware of, but we don't get all the secrets. The public, certainly not aware of. Seems like some, certainly not paying attention. There's guys simply not available because of health concerns, or I should say in the bullpen, more youth concerns, and so that they don't have health problems.
Right.
Like every night, there's this bingo board, or however you want to say it, of blocked out guys. And in addition to, so that means that we're down today to Wingenter and Edwards and Strom. I wonder which one of those guys we're going to, which Strom we're going to get, which Wingenter we're going to get.
Right.
And it's been a really very trying situation. And I put that as just a factor. The fact is there's enough talent there that it could have worked out.
Oh, there's no question. And at times it did work out. I mean, there were times this year where the bullpen was really good. But again, it's the inconsistency is an issue.
Yeah.
So speaking of inconsistent, and how's that for a segue? Tuesday night's starter, Eric Lauer.
Mm-hmm.
He's not facing the Dodgers. When he faces the Dodgers, we know what we're going to get. When he faces any other team, well, when he faces the Rockies, unfortunately, we usually know what we're going to see. But all the other teams, we're not sure, and I'm sure he's never pitched against Tampa. But Lauer's been through, and it's been a rough go for him. And you wrote something that was in today's paper and online today about his dad. What did he have to – I'm curious, what did he have to say and how were his emotions when he was talking about his dad?
Well, I got to give credit to Annie Heilbrun, who, we talked about this, and she did the video on this. And she, talked to him, and I felt like in watching that interview, it was like, I'm not going to go to that's enough. The Union Tribune has talked to Eric enough about his dead dad. So she did a real good job on that. Eric is a stoic guy, and but a couple times, if you watch this video, and then I talked to him afterward to just clarify a few things. Even for a stoic guy, I mean, as if this would surprise anyone, I mean, his dad was his coach for a long time. I mean, his dad was 54, Eric's 24. I don't know that we can at all know how much it has affected him. The fact is he had a 2.80 ERA. Over the 9 starts preceding his father's death. He got the call the day after the start at the Dodgers. That included, that 9 starts included the 2 1/3 innings of 5 runs in Colorado. So it's not like he was just on our, no, I mean, they weren't all real good. He was pretty darn good for 2+ months. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, especially the fact that this has clearly been a life rocking situation for a young man who was very close to his father.
Right. No, I can understand that. I mean, I was basically his father's age when my father died, so I can't relate to what it must have been like, you know, to be 24. And, you know, if my dad had died at that point, you know, it would have been, I mean, it was already devastating when he died 30 years later. But I mean, I can't imagine being that young and, you know, and losing my dad and especially someone like Eric, who you said he was his coach for a long time and they were obviously very close. So, I think that's true. So it's probably, you know, it's probably not fair to talk about how inconsistent he is. If you just look at the numbers, he's been inconsistent. If you factor in what he's been through, then, you know, you can draw a little bit more from that and say that he's certainly not someone that the Padres should be writing off as far as their future. I mean, we've talked before, him and Lucchesi both seem like sort of 4 and 5 type starters. If you're going to have a really good team, that's where you would want them sort of lining up in your rotation.
Look, both of them have that ability and actually the likelihood they're going to give you 5 innings. Go look at good teams and, you know, there's a bunch of whole bunch of 4 2/3 and 5 1/3 starts by guys because you have, you know, your studs at the top of your rotation.
Right.
And that's what Eric Lauer and Joey Lucchesi have. Now, like the other day when Andy Green was talking about, you know, for a while we had a culture here where 5 innings was okay, and he kind of went off a little bit. It was almost like he's speaking directly to Joey Lucchesi and Eric Lauer. Because that was okay for those guys last year.
Uh-huh.
They know it's not this year, and he wants to see another step. And both of them have to be better. Joey went 4 2/3 last night through 94 pitches. Really struggled with his command, which is a repeating issue with him. Eric Lauer, there's times where, and again, this is, you know, you're like, well, gosh, how much is he going to really have that instinct, you know, that conviction right now if he's, you know, kind of hurting inside? I don't know, but that was our point. Don't know. But the Eric Lauer sometimes is just like, wow, man, he's making all the right pitches in all the right places, which Eric Lauer has to do because, you know, it's not great stuff. And then there's times he's not. And I don't know, maybe that's what a 4 and 5 starter looks like, Eric, or Jay, but the Padres got to see more out of these two guys to be comfortable with them as a part of the rotation when they, you know, expect to be good.
Right, and which leads me to tomorrow's starter for the final game of the homestand, again, against Tampa, and Cal Quantrill pitching, coming back after a fantastic start on Friday night. I was at that game, and he ended up going 7 innings, five hits, 5 strikeouts, no walks, through 102 pitches, and just looked really good all the way around in that game. It wasn't like he was – like I thought he was extraordinarily lucky or anything like that. He was just pitching really well against, you know, a pretty decent lineup, although I know the Rockies haven't played great. But he continues to impress, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's how many scoreless innings are we, or it's like 3 earned runs in 30 innings now, or somewhere in that 3 earned runs in 20, maybe 20, 3 earned runs in 29 innings, something.
I think it's 3 and 29. That sounds
something
right.
Like that. But he's been outstanding now for, you know, 5, I think it's 5 straight starts.
Well, I think it's actually,
no, one of them wasn't,
you know, Jay.
Right. One of them wasn't a start, but it was an opener,
5 2/3 scoreless as the, you know, the what's he called? He calls it the bulker. Is that the official word?
I don't even
the
know.
The bulker
what it is
the guy who.
Anyway,
which is the bulk of the game.
Right. His last 5 appearances or something like that.
Right.
He's
so
been really good and looking forward to seeing him, you know, tomorrow against a team that obviously people here don't know, most people here don't know a whole lot about. And I include myself in that. I mean, I look at their lineup and there's not a lot of familiar names in there to me, but. You know, they're 70 and 50, I think, as we tape this. So it's a pretty good team.
Yeah, 90 wins last year. Didn't make the playoffs. Tough division. The thing about Cal Quantrill, there's 2 things, and I'll start with the mentality because that's what we're talking about with Lucchesi and Lauer, right? I mean, I've been so impressed. You remember the story I did like a month ago where this guy talked about the chip on his shoulder and all that, and he acknowledged it was kind of ridiculous for a guy who went to Stanford, grew up, his dad in the major league,
absolutely,
yada, yada.
Yeah.
That's how he pitches, and that's how – virtually every guy think about them. And I'm not saying that he will be Verlander, Scherzer, Strasburg.
Mm-hmm.
That's how those guys pitch. That is awesome.
Well,
I just love it when it comes together for a young kid like that.
Right. And I you know, I remember the one quote we talked about that I loved where he said, I don't care if it's the second inning or the fifth inning or the eighth inning or whatever, you know, my job's to pitch and I go out there and pitch. And I know the one term that Andy Green has used, I've heard a couple times to describe him, is the bulldog, which, you know, brings back, for those of us old enough, you know, brings back memories to Oral Hershiser, who was, I don't know if he was the original bulldog, but he certainly had the nickname, you know, 31 years ago when he had that amazing season for the Dodgers. So I think if someone's using that word to describe you around baseball, that seems to be a pretty good sort of a term of endearment from a manager, and that speaks well to Quantrill and what he's been able to do as a rookie.
And now that is not enough. I mean, Ian Kinsler's a bulldog, and he had some balls hit like 400 miles an hour off him last night. Obviously, I'm using hyperbole to explain that that's not enough, but my understanding is that, and from people who know this stuff, both in and out of the organization, his stuff has gotten better. Like with confidence, with some mechanical adjustments, his fastball is, well, first of all, his fastball's going where he wanted to,
right.
And that wasn't happening before. But his changeup and his slider are different now. And so, you know, put those two together, confidence, the bulldog, or his three things, confidence, bulldog, and better stuff. And heck, maybe he was a first-round pick,
Yeah, there was
maybe that was a good
I was going to say, first-round pick. For a reason, right? So,
yeah.
Okay, well, we won't get into the catching stuff today. It's been talked about. You wrote a long story about Francisco Mejia today that people can easily check out online. And the bottom line is Mejia is going to be catching more, especially when he keeps hitting like he's hitting, and he had a home run.
Got robbed last night.
I was
going to
say,
I did see
the highlight of Kiermaier's catch, and it was just fantastic. I mean,
that's not
the first time he's done that.
No.
In fact,
his
greatest catch ever, according to one of the guys in Tampa that I read, might have been against Machado in Baltimore, actually. So go check that out. I think it was in 2015, maybe. It was very similar to the Mike Trout catch in Baltimore that always stands out as one of the best catches I've ever seen. So anyway, Kiermaier was robbed Mejia of yet another hit last night. So anyway, two more against the Rays, and then the Padres and Kevin Acey will be on their way to Philadelphia. And we will talk to you on Friday, which I believe will be a paddock day on Friday night in Philadelphia, correct?
Yes, after these, four guys in a row went on 4 days rest, that off day allows them to keep paddock on track. So
right, with his usual 5 days
yes.
of rest. So we will see him, and I would assume Lamet and Lucchesi on
everybody else again the off day now.
Right.
After that, they're going to run into two more off days or three more over the rest of the season, and we'll see. Garrett Richards supposedly back on track, Pedro Avila supposedly on track, possibly Jacob Nix. That'll help them.
Yeah.
But for now, we're going to be seeing the rotation in order. Yeah.
Right. So, all right. Well,
all
Kevin,
right.
We'll talk to you on Friday from Philly, and until then, everyone, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.